Hello, welcome to the Old Man Orange Podcast. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes.
And I'm Ryan Dunnigan. And I got kind of a, because I'm back overseas, and sounds like I'm with a war. Back overseas, no, I'm back in Europe. And over here, they actually have the Van Gogh Museum. And I didn't know about this till a news story happened, but apparently the Van Gogh Museum was doing a brand crossover. Can you take a guess which one?
For the Van Gogh brand crossover?
Just something you have to get exclusively at Van Gogh, a brand crossover. Just take a shot. I'm going to see if I'll give you two guesses.
Okay, Batman's my first guess.
No.
No. Okay, Sonic the Hedgehog's my second guess.
That's closer.
Oh, it's a Pikachu Van Gogh.
Yeah, so they're doing a Pokemon Van Gogh thing there, and you know, it was one of those things, like, I always wanted to check out the Van Gogh Museum, but like, there's a time limit on it. Like, now I'm like, on this they had a special exhibit for it. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, well, I guess that kind of I should probably go see a little sooner, because, you know, I always wanted to go to the Van Gogh Museum, and I didn't
feel like that's right. There's all these old snooty artists, people are like, oh, now they show up because Pikachu's here. You know, like,
well, here's the thing. So that's kind of like, you know, so the way I first found out about this was a news story here. And like, apparently there's been like scalpers, because they've been giving away like exclusive merch you can only get here, as well as exclusive like Van Gogh Pokemon cards you can only get here until next year, until they release them or whatever. But they want the first edition or whatever, right? You know,
yeah.
So you've been having scalpers just go in there, and they've down to the level of they've had like an illegal Pokemon art trade in Amsterdam, like in front of the Van Gogh Museum. And it was all in Dutch, so I wasn't able to pick up on all of it, but my wife is there to translate it. And just like showing like all these like hoodlums, like all like looking around, just like, yo man, you want some Pikachu, you know, you want that Ave, you know, kind of like that type of shit. And to the point of like people actually getting into fights outside of the museum, or like people like swiping like Van Gogh Pikachu cards out of kids' hands, and like people chasing them down, like, get back here, motherfucker, you know. So I mean I'm like, and it was kind of funny because the news story, they were like, there's the director of the museum or whatever, and she was kind of to the effect of like, well, Pokemon's like, it's been bringing a lot of business to the museum, and it's been really surprising. Well, Pokemon is like the most popular brand in the world. Did you guys not see this coming? No, we didn't see this coming. Like, well, I mean, it's Pokemon, and it's multi-generational. I'm surprised that there wasn't things in place. Yes, well, we just didn't see this coming. You know, kind
of like, yeah.
So it's, well, just like,
I think showing with people that they get so outside of the realm of, you know, they're only into their thing, and it just doesn't cross their mind that this other stuff is extraordinarily popular on a different front and so on like that.
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, it's all this, you know, because we heard it, because, you know, there's like different levels. Like, here's his portraits, here's his landscaping stuff, here's maybe some of the stuff before he did his impressionist kind of style and whatnot. Different floors. We didn't have enough time to see the whole museum because because of this, they actually had, you actually, because there's so many people trying to get in, they had to do it like, they have to do it at certain times of the day. So they have to reach, because they don't reach capacity. So before, yeah, just be like, come on down to the museum. And then like, there's like cell phone footage of just like people just like fucking vultures over a fucking deer carcass, just like going through boxes and grabbing shit, like, yeah, fucking, you know. And like, it's one of those things where I'm not going to lie, as a guy in his 30s, I feel a little embarrassed. I mean, anybody with the video could see the room here. But I was like, they had like a Van Gogh Pikachu, like plushie. I was kind of hoping they'd have some of those left. They didn't, but it's all good. It's all good. He still had his ear, but if he was missing the ear, that would have been like the perfect little touch. But, you know, walked away with a print, so I can't complain.
Yeah, you at least got something.
But yeah.
I say, yeah, at least you just got something out of the whole kind of thing.
Yeah, and the whole thing was more of like, there is like a little wall. We just saw this long line. We get up there, I'm like, oh, it's just that wall? We thought it was going to be like a whole little section, but it's just one wall.
Of, we thought they were just going to toss all that other shit out of here and put up just Pokemon artifacts. Like, you can get rid of all these other paintings. Like, they're just taking up space that could have a Charizard or a Gyarados one.
Starry Night, who needs this shit? Just like frisbee it out the window, you know? That's an original. Yeah, so is this fucking Charizard.
Throw it out the window for some reason. There's a passing by plane, you just get sliced up in the propeller.
Flying real low there for some reason, but hey, you know, I guess the airport.
He's trying to get a glimpse of Pikachu.
And if you look to your left, we're just going to zoom in here real quick, see if he.
Oh shit, bubbles!
No, so no, the museum itself was. I just wanted to go there regardless, but I was like, well, this gives me a reason to stop by the gift shop, you know, because I feel like you can get Van Gogh prints anywhere, but Pikachu Van Gogh print, not as much. They had like basically. And their justification, because I guess they have, like, I'm not sure if they do it, like, how much they cycle through different, like, temporary exhibits. But I don't know what other ones they had before, but I guess their reasoning for Pokemon is, aside from money, was also that Van Gogh loved Japanese prints. So that was their lead-in. And they had, like, four or five pictures that were of, they're actually three self-portraits, one of Pikachu, one of Eevee, one of the thing that looks like Snoopy that has a paintbrush. I forgot what it's called. Modeled after three different Van Gogh portraits. Then there's the one of, like, there's the famous, like, sunflower one, where there's the sunflower Pokemon sticking out of that in the middle of that. There's one of Van Gogh's room in Paris, where it's not Paris, but in France, where it was all blue. Mm-hmm. And they had like a Snorlax and a couple of Pokemon crowded in that room. And then they had one of, not Harvest, but one of his landscape ones, where it's a lot of like tall dead grass and some birds flying, and all the birds were different bird Pokemon. And they were done in the style of Van Gogh, and they were done apparently in the similar type of brush strokes and techniques he would use, and they were all done by official Pokemon artists.
Yeah, huh, that's just interesting all around. I mean, yeah, it's like one of those ones where it kind of makes it feel like this, like a weird, like totally official fan art kind of Comic-Con come together thing.
Fan art for Van Gogh. They were actually official Pokemon artists that all did it. It wasn't like they went on Tumblr or like went on Instagram. Like, hey, we got a spot open. But
realistically, if those Pokemon artists, because like the one thing that's interesting, if you look at Pokemon cards nowadays, Pokemon cards can kind of come in all sorts of different like art styles and forms, and they're not just kind of in like the okay, here's this, you know, section or generation of cards, and it almost feels like it's all kind of generally coming from one or two people, you know. Now they're all completely. I mean, like some can be very like, you know, obscure, and some can be very like radical and very artistic looking, and so on. The kind of cool thing is they credit always the artist on the card nowadays, which is kind of neat. So it says who it is right there. And they're always Japanese. I've never seen an American do any of that, but, you know, one of those ones.
I don't remember all the names. I think there may have been one American on there one at least non-Japanese name. But yeah, no, it was pretty cool, but it just got me thinking just about like the black market Amsterdam Pokemon ring, you know what I mean? It just sounds like something like, you know, down the far end of the red light district, you know.
Well, that's just what happens. Like the second that you make those collectible items kind of scarce, literally, you know, you mentioned that, and yesterday I was talking to my friend Buddy, and he was telling me all about, because he flew out to New York to go to the very last Kiss concert and whatnot, and I think it was Yeah, it like legitimately kind of is the last Kiss. Kiss is one of those kind of bands that would do that. Like, we'd be like, no, we're, you know, they're not like Motley Crue, who like signed a contract and be like, yo, man, we're never doing another concert ever. But then it almost feels kind of Motley Crue-ish to be like, yeah, we don't listen to our own rules. So we're back on tour. Also, Vince played at the Jackson Rancheria and he said, never again. He's like, I saw my life. He literally did, because I went to go see him there, and it was like he wasn't on the big stage that Alice Cooper and other artists get to play. No. He was literally on like the back, like conference hall stage that I've literally DJed on the same stage that Vince Neil has been on.
So let's actually put a pin in Buddy's story. We'll come back to that. I want to know this because you were there for this. So Vince Neil was playing like at the business stage in the far back of the Rancheria.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of technically the far back of it. Yeah, it's like it's literally like it's. I mean, it's a decent sized, convention hall, I guess you would sort of say, but it's about the size that you'd put a prom in. That's about the size of it. Because that was literally like I've been there before for like whatever the hell schools in that area that do their prom.
So was he just, so you saw that, okay, was he up there kind of like, what the fuck is this? Was he talking shit during the show or something? Or
No, he was just kind of going with it and so on like that. But you just know that what happened is he went on his, you know, Vince Neil solo tour, which the only thing I was kind of bummed about, he didn't really play any of his Vince Neil solo music. And I'm like, dude, that Vince Neil album in like 1991 Exposed is like almost better than like, you know, the majority of Motley Crue albums. And I say that as a big Motley Crue fan, but that Vince Neil album is so good. I mean, he's got Steve Stevens of Billy Idol on guitar and everything like that. I mean, like, well, what are you not going to like about it? It's got the song from Encino Man's in there too, but. But yeah, it's just like one of those ones, you know, that I just felt like he went on that tour and he probably went to a bunch of places that were like that. It was just like, dude, no. Burn that contract up. Like, we are going back out. It is big stage or no stage.
To be fair, when we went to go see Tom Morello, he was at a cool venue, but it wasn't the biggest venue. But if he and Rage are together, then they're like headlining Coachella or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's always kind of how it's been, you know, I mean, just, you know, you go to the smaller ones and so on like that. But, yeah, and ironically, Vince Neil keeps coming back to like the area, because then I saw him. I got to meet him when he was at that wedding.
So you got to meet him?
Yeah, I did. He was literally at there was a wedding that me and my buddy Jordan worked at, doing the DJing at, and Vince Neil was there. And that was like the whole thing. It's like, no, I'm definitely going to that one. I don't care. Come hell or high water. I don't care how like much of a bridezilla this lady is. I want to be there for Vince Neil.
How long ago was this wedding?
It was in like May.
Why am I now just finding out about this? I mean, I'm not like the biggest Motley Crue fan, but I'm just like, I assume that would have been the opening story on like a podcast. Like, bro, I met Vince Neil today. Like, I just assumed that's what that would fucking be.
That, for some reason, I thought I sent you a picture of that of Vince Neil. I didn't ask for one. I just went to talk to him. That was it a couple times, but. You know, I don't want to be that guy. Be like, yo, bro, can I get a picture? I'm like, I just want to talk to them. That's like talking to somebody and shaking their hand is almost more important than having a photo. I feel like a photo is only so you can show up to like other people.
That's how I feel too. What did he have a line going up the door of people that wanted to talk to him?
No, not really. It's like one of those ones you could totally tell that it was just like it was him and this other old dude were kind of hanging out like on the back table, sort of talking to each other. And apparently, Vince Neil's wife was the maid of honor to the lady getting married, and that's how the connection was there.
Oh, okay.
So he was just sort of doing his, you could just tell that he was kind of like, oh, I'm just sort of hanging out here. I'm kind of like the different one here. It's like, I'll let the kids do their thing or whatever.
Well, I guess that's also like, if it was a young person wedding, then maybe not as many people, not to be a dick, maybe not as many people know who he is exactly, you know?
I think that's kind of true, because they were, you know, they're probably about that somewhat around the age of us, but you could totally tell that they were more like the trendy new age people, and you know, not retro and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think they like they knew, but like it wasn't like I guess it wasn't as big of a deal, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, whatever, there's the, you know, there's Uncle honest, Vince over there.
If you're not really a huge like Motley Crue fan and you saw him, it probably, he might look familiar for a minute, but it probably wouldn't register right away. It would probably be more of like, if you were looking for him, you probably spot him. But if you weren't thinking he was there, weren't thinking about it, or weren't a huge fan of me, like, you know, there might be that thing like, that might be him, but I don't want to make this awkward. Like, oh, you're not him? I'm sorry. I thought you, okay, I'll leave you alone. Bye. You know, kind of like that, you know?
Yeah. I think that was kind of it, you know, because he looked like somebody's kind of like hip old uncle just hanging out in the back, you know? Oh, there's someone's uncle. He's got long blonde hair, you know, he's got some chains on and things like that, but he still has like a suit. It doesn't look like he's not too radical. And America's Jordan's like, dude, he's like, Vince, he's like, I really like your boots. He's like, you like my boots? He's like, well, thanks, man. You know, and then Jordan, I think, asked, he's like, well, where'd you get them at? He's like, look, I'm at Neiman Marcus. You know, he's like, you know, but he was all excited when like Jordan commented on his boots.
My boots? Wow, thanks. You're like, hey, man, I just want to let you know, like, Motley Crue is one of my favorite bands ever. It's great. I just want to let you know. It's
more about the boots.
I got my first blowjob to Shout at the Devil, and I just want to, like, yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you. Yeah.
Boots.
Anyway, man, thanks for the boots. Exactly.
It was funny, like, when I shook his hand, I was like, man, he has literally the world's softest hand.
Oh, that looking was the first thing I thought. Maybe, yeah.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, you know, it was like, wow, that's impressive.
Last time I saw him, he didn't look so hot. But I mean, you know, that's what time does. But at the exact same time, I imagine there had to be that period where he is just gobs of it, face like that. And that probably has to have an effect on your hands to have the world's like just like, you know, most silky hands possible, probably.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah, I feel like it would only seem right that Vince Neil would, you know, but yeah, no, yeah, he was there, and, you know, that part was cool. The rest of it was all, oh, okay, here's some trendy Las Vegas folk, but.
Did you have, like, because whenever I meet a celebrity, I never really approach a celebrity too often, unless maybe when we met Christopher Titus, I guess because we were approaching him, there's a line, so it's a little bit more.
Well, there's a line, and there was like a, hey, do you want to meet Christopher Titus? Like, fuck yeah, I want to meet Christopher Titus. Like, get a line.
I had a little bit of like, oh, holy shit, when I met, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Wednesday 13?
Not Wednesday 13, no. Because I just got into him, so it wasn't as big of a deal for me to meet him, but I was still happy to meet him. Oh god, I can't believe I'm trying to blank on his name. Paul Dini. When I met Paul Dini, that was okay, kind of like, oh shit, like, oh hi Paul, hi, thanks for creating half my childhood, like, oh thank you, you know, like he was nice and he was cordial, but very much like, I get this every time I do one of these. Kind of like that. Yeah. But I wasn't trying to over, so I just want to thank you for just making my childhood like so awesome and this and that, like, ah, you're welcome, man, thank you for supporting me. You're like, okay, yeah, cool, I'm gonna leave before I fuck this up, you know? And then it was like around a comic book store, and then at some point like his wife came by and just put, like, I just want you to know he really appreciates those kind of things, so thank you for telling him that, like, yes, yes, I'm gonna leave before I fuck this up now.
So, yeah, exactly, make it simple.
yeah so.
Yeah, no, I think that's always a key thing to do. Well, because if as you get into a conversation, you'll just start saying shit, and you don't really mean to say anything, but, you know, you'll just end up saying something that sounds slightly offensive or something like that.
I never said anything offensive, I don't think, but I just kind of like lingered too long one time, and I didn't fanboy out too much, but it was like back when I was working on my bike rental job, and I said this on the show, but it was years ago, so. I met one of the, I had like this really pretty young couple that was renting a bike, and, you know, they went out and then, they came back, and then there's a little girl there who saw the guy, and the guy and the girl was like, so, like, you know, just so like stargazing, and like took a picture with them, and they're come back to fill out the pay and sign off the thing or whatever. I'm like, oh, are you an actor or something? You know, he's like, oh yeah, I do a lot of Disney Channel stuff. But she was just in the new Mad Max movie, and she was one of the slave girls from Mad Max Fury Road. She was like the youngest one. And I was like, oh, you're in that movie? That was a really good movie. You're really good in it. Like, oh, thank you. Like, I thought you looked familiar. Yeah. That was like one of my favorite movies I saw last year. Like, oh, that's awesome. Good place to leave it off. But they says, like, I mean, even that part at the end when like they get the hook, it goes in the side of the guy's mouth, just rips his jaw off. Like, yeah, that part was cool. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, like, here's your seat. You guys have a good day. All right, cool. Bye. Like, it could have been way worse, but also could have just been like, yeah, we're done. You know.
That was like, I remember, I think it was when I met the Stabbing Westward singer guy or whatnot, and he was at like the world's teeniest tiny, like if I thought that the Vince Neil show was small, this poor bastard was at like the Nashville like equivalent of like I don't even know what to say would be small. I could say like, let's say Mount Zion concert for a very, very Tuolumne local reference. But that was literally the size of that venue, was about that. It was like, picture Mount Zion, like, so like a small building with like a bar on top of it too. So it was two stories. I was going to say it made it slightly bigger. But yeah, he was playing with one of his like newer bands or whatever. I feel bad. I can't remember what they are right now. I have his CDs. I got them autographed, but like, so the opening band had like nine people in it because it was one of those bands that just like, they want all their friends to be somehow involved in there. So even if one guy was in the back, just banging bongos or something, like, you know what I mean? Like, it was one of those ones. Like, nobody said they could not be in the band. And so there was that.
It's like, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that band right there and whatever their like friend pretty much made up like 90% of the audience. And then there was about like eight other people.
I just think of that episode of Doug where like they're just like, hey, so we need someone to play the drums. Well, I have someone who wants, I want to join. If my friend wants to play and they play the accordion, like, well, okay, why play the triangle? And by the end, they just have this giant band that can't, like, you know, there's too many people. Like, we all want a solo. Like, there's a 20 person band. We can't all have a solo. Ah, like, okay, everyone can have a solo. Jeez. You know, so, so I'm just thinking, like, okay.
That's pretty much what this band was. I think this band literally was one of those ones that had two bass players in it kind of thing, three or four guitar players, like, yeah, two drummers, like, two singers. I don't know. There was a lot going on that thing there. And then the Stabbing Westward dude came on next and put on a real good show. But I felt kind of bad for him because it's like he had, like, two people from that, like, drove from, like, Alabama to come there to come see him. So it felt like, oh, they came a distance. And then he had, like, us, me and Marshall there. So there was, like, two other people. And then about maybe three more people or whatever, and then that 25 people of the opening band. that was it. And then I felt bad because we were like hanging out at the merch booth talking. I was like, well, shit, here, I'll buy your CDs and stuff like that. Like, you know, here, you gotta get some money going so you get to the next place and whatnot.
You and we say started to talking like about. That? Did you say to him like, you'll get up there one day. One day you'll make some money and you'll have a successful band. I'm sure.
Well, ironically, I actually didn't realize how famous this guy was until I went back home and looked at Wikipedia on it. It was like, oh, shit, this guy's got fucking gold albums from the 90s. And, like, he's got tunes in Batman and Robin or Batman Forever, one or the other, or something like that. You know, because he was in this new band. It was just like, cool, there's some random metal band playing in Nashville, which is rare. So let's just go see whatever the hell it is. You know, it was one of those kind of moments. And then I remember we were talking about California. He's like, oh, man, I love California. He's like, Yosemite and so on like that, and this is where I made the comment. I'm like, yeah, you know, Yosemite's great except for all the stupid fucking tourists.
Just hard eye contact, not blinking.
You know, it's like, well, it's like, oh yeah, I guess you would have been a tourist if you came out there. I see how this all works out.
It's fantastic. Like you. Maybe if you weren't such a shitty tourist, maybe Stabbing Westward would still be around, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You let it all flip right through your fucking fingers, didn't you?
maybe Joel Schumacher would have had a third Batman movie.
It wasn't for you.
But it's like, well, those ones. Like, oh, yeah.
Anyway, does that mean cut you off there?
That guy was real awesome and nice, and, yeah, the band that he had was pretty cool. As I said, I can't remember exactly what it is off the top of my head. That's just when you've listened to too many bands in life, but.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've heard of him, he sounds pretty cool. From the music I've heard. But if we're talking like celebrities that we've met for a second, since we're on this, I actually one time, I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the show, I actually met Jerry Rice one time without realizing it.
Oh, really? Was he like a Walmart signing or something?
Yeah, Jerry Rice was at a Walmart signing. No, it was actually once again at the bike rental company. Just like, God. Famously known for being hanging out at Walmart, Jerry Rice in Tuolumne County.
Well, it's no, funny because you'll see that every once in a while. Like, they'll literally get, they're like, here's some 49ers player, Raiders guy doing a signing. He's on like his like Comic-Con tour, but instead he's hitting up supermarkets.
Nah, it was it was back again at the bike rental company in San Francisco. And I didn't realize it was Jerry Rice. It was that year when the Super Bowl, the Niners weren't playing, but the Super Bowl was in San Francisco. And so they had, you know, of course, you know, not just the teams playing, but old school like teams and players there for events and whatnot. So I didn't put two and two together. And at some point, and the guy was wearing, like, he was all incognito. He was, like, in a black, like, Under Armour shirt. He had, like, a black hat, sunglasses. Not even with this, I didn't put it together. Then, like an 80 medallion, like a gold 80 medallion, like, hanging from his neck. Even then, I didn't put two and two together. And I was just like, okay, guys, so we're just going to get you. You know, they went on to rent one of those little, like, quad bikes that went around the park. And I was like, okay, I just need you guys to sign here. Like, she can sign for me. He's all trying to avoid. I'm like, yeah, I know. I mean, you have to sign for yourself. Like, she can sign it. Like, you just got to scribble. You put an X for all you care. I don't care. He's like, ugh. Just like little scribble. Just like looking around. And then he bikes off. after I give him the explanation, I'm thinking for a minute, like, that guy was kind of dodging. I was realizing the number and then the number, and then he was afraid to sign something. I was just, wait a minute. And then I just kind of even looked the name he printed. His name was uneligible. Like, he just, like, you know, just like uneligible name he put down. And it was the girl he was with gave her credit card and her ID for the thing. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So then, like, I look it up, I'm like, that's Jerry fucking Rice. You know, I didn't realize it right away. That was Jerry fucking Rice, you know, and then he came back and I wasn't going to be like, Mr. Rice, hello, sir. I would just be like, because he thought he got away. And like, well, I'll give him this. I'll let him think he got away here. You know, so he got away and he's like, God damn, man, the fucking thing. You weren't fucking around with that. You were, because I said, like, go out for this one hill. He's like, you weren't with the fucking hill. God damn. Like, he was just super out.
Well, you're fucking Jerry Rice. Like, are you telling me you can't, like, pedal up that hill fast enough?
You're like, yeah, I know. So, yeah.
So, yeah, if I toss a football to the top of the hill, let's see how fast you can pedal up to it.
I just, like, throw a football. He immediately just catches it. It's just reflexes. He can't help it.
Like one of those ones, like, yeah, just instinct now. He's like, damn, I hate when people just throw a random football.
He was a running back, right?
Yeah. Okay, right. For the 49ers, and then he jumped ship to the Raiders. It was a big deal in California.
I remember some people actually literally had the 49ers, like, Raiders, Rice division, like, jersey.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those ones. Some people accepted it, and some people were like, he's a traitor to society.
I remember... Like, yeah, I remember, like, I didn't really keep up enough. There's just a couple of names you remember, like you know, Jerry Rice, Steve Young, Joe Montana, you know, there's more, but, you know, like Jeff Garcia, I guess, you know. But.
Yeah, like all the guys that appear on the cover of a game. That's like, I know, like, were you on the cover of a video game? Okay, I get it then, yeah. Yeah, no.
Well, there's the whole Madden curse, apparently. I'm sorry, I derailed it. We made this all about, like, can we make these famous people? But, like, what was it that Buddy was going through, if that's still an interesting story?
Well, the Kiss thing just reminded me, because since you're talking about the Pokemon thing, is that since it was Kiss's last tour, or last concert date, New York kind of went all ham on the whole event and so on like that. So the newspapers, you know, were putting stuff out. There was, like, Kiss taxicab theme stuff. There was all kinds of things around New York that there was. Of course, there was all kinds of interesting merchandise, you know, posters that you could only get, like, on the specific day, because it was at Madison Square Garden is where they held it at, you know. So Buddy was saying that, like, yeah, he was getting some stuff like that. And, like, you know, a lot of that stuff, like, the second that people got it, it was like the next day it was on eBay for like five times the price that whatever you paid for it, you know. Even weird things, like, there was like these glow-in-the-dark wristbands that were on the seats and whatnot, and, you know, people were selling those for like $75, and they really just kind of came with the ticket. But you know how that goes.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of it depends. Like, I understand, like, if you buy something, you don't remove it out of the package, and you think to yourself, this might be worth something in a couple years or way down the line, and I'm going to resell it then. I can understand that. Or if even you go to the level of, like, here's one, I don't know, action figure stuff. You take one out of the box, put it on your shelf, then have another one stored away. If you have the money and the resource, like, if I had the money for that, I'd probably
like, you buy one, you put it on your shelf. You take one, you just throw in the trash. Like, fuck this. I got the kind of money for that kind of stuff.
Just stunning, you know, I love it, but I hate it. I need to own it, but I also want to destroy it, you know? So, yeah. No, if I had the money for, like, figures I really liked, like that Darwin Cook Batman back there, I probably would, like, take that one out of the box, buy another one, store the other one, resell it later, you know, just one, just the thing that scalpers, though, man, the people that go and buy this shit in bulk and then, like, sell it, like, on eBay for like three times the price, like, especially when it's like a kid's thing, like Pokemon cards or Amiibos or something like that, like, those motherfuckers, that's someone you can just, like, infinity snap away. Everyone, I'm like, I'll be fine with that, you know. I'll just be like, okay, here's some, you can infinity snap, like, all these world leaders who are really fucking horrible, or all these, like, really corrupt businessmen that are just ruining the lives of people, or scalpers. Let's start with scalpers. We'll work our way up, you know.
So, yeah, I mean, like, there is a point where it's like, I get it. If you are kind of doing like a buy and resell and it sort of funds, like, cause some people, they do it in the way that like, well, this kind of funds my, like, you know, my hobby, I guess you would sort of say. So like, I buy a couple extra, I get at least keep one, then I sell the other two. It sort of pays for the endeavors. I kind of get that. It is when the people just start the, you know, the meet the guy in the back of like the Walmart before, like he's unloaded the truck and things like that. And then you're just doing it that way.
Just that's to, you the know, shit I'm talking about. It's yeah. The guys that like wait there. They buy all the shit. They buy like half the stock or majority of the stock. And they, it's always something that's like, you know, like I said, like I'm not a huge Amiibo person, but like this is how I found out certain Amiibos are really rare. I was just thinking, it's like, oh, it's Amiibo, it's Nintendo, it's Mario. Finding a Mario Amiibo should be easy or fine. Like, oh no, they're all just limited. Like, that's fucking stupid. That's your flagship character, unless it's okay, whatever. And then like, and then finding out that there's this whole like scalper's market for like just that just seems really fucking shitty to me when it's like something that, you know, a kid wants and or a 30-year-old guy, you know, like, especially when it's something, you know, that kids really like to collect. And then it just makes it impossible to fucking get unless you want to pay like $400 for it. Like, fuck those people, you know, like if you buy like a bunch of them, but if you like buy like two or three or whatever, for one for yourself, others to say sell down the line, I get that. But, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's like you almost just like answer that question. Like, why? It's because kids want it. It's because it's hard to find. It's all those things. It's like the downfall is it's commerce in general. It's like one of those ones. It's like it just creates that inner pirate mentality comes out where like certain people just see that and they go, oh my gosh, there's an opportunity here and I'm going to exploit it.
Well, it's also, yeah, well, it's kind of like one of the things that annoys me about Nintendo. I mean, I know they eventually always plan to re-release something down the line, but it's like, I guess one of the reasons, and this is me just kind of like paraphrasing something I heard loosely like 4 years ago, but apparently, one of the reasons why the Super Nintendo Classic and NES Classic, why those were only limited is because they put down the thing of like special edition, limited release. And in Japan, if you put down special edition, well, there's basically laws for collectors. Like, well, it better be special edition. You can't charge this much then and say, oh, it's back again. Like, and it's not a big deal, you know? So there has to be this thing to legitimize this version of it here and now. So if you call it special edition, there can only be X amount of them. So that's one of the things, at least this is going off something I've heard like 4 or 5 years ago. And so that's kind of like, well, I mean, if you just sold it regularly, it'd always be there. We could always just fucking buy it and you wouldn't have to worry about these scalper fucks, would you? You know? So.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like Nintendo sets that up that like it's intentional that like, that's just going to happen. Like, I almost kind of wonder when companies do that, if they are sort of the ones selling it themselves on eBay for three times the price afterwards to make even more money off
it. Shigeru Miyamoto's
there. eBay account. It literally just has his name on it. It's like, you're not trying to be incognito at all. You know, cause I think about that too. It's like when it comes down to, I know why Nintendo does that. They make things seem limited and rare, that it makes it more of a must-have item, because the perfect example is Sony doesn't do that and their items just seem like junk. And even same with Microsoft, it feels like there's nothing worthwhile here. Like, they don't have really a collector feel to anything that they make because their stuff's in such like large quantities that you can always get it for the most part, you know, where Nintendo will do that thing where like, oh well, yeah, but here's the thing, you can only get it for this limited time, so you better, like, you know, go out and buy it, stand in line, murder somebody in the street. We don't care how you get it, just get it. You're a Nintendo fan, right? Make sure the money comes to us. That's what we really want, but, you know.
Then have a better system than kind of like, it's available now, the special controller. Hope you're by a computer, because otherwise it's going to be out of stock forever unless you feel like paying $200 for it on eBay or more, yeah. You know? So that's where I'm like, get fucked, you know.
Well, yeah, that was like the N64 controller was like that. That's what I was talking about. Yeah. That thing was out. It's in stock totally now. Okay. You can go get one. I almost even thought about getting a second one just because of that, but I kind of got lucky and was able to get one right off the bat. But yeah, it's like those things like that, like, yeah, they kind of landlock some of those things down a bit, which is always kind of a bummer. But I know why they do it though. It does make it feel more special, where it's like a PlayStation controller, it's just like, whatever. PlayStation controller, like, you know, like, it doesn't have anything special that feels about it, you know, unless it's one of those rare ones where they're like, here's the limited edition PS5 PS1 version, you know, and like, and it's gone.
my thing is, I know why they do it too. It's just one of those things of like, not everything you make is special. Not everything you make needs to be this big fucking deal. Just like, I already give you guys enough of my money as it is. Just make it easy to get, you know, that's just my thing. I'm like, I'm not a brand loyalist, you know? Yeah. I like Nintendo on average, but if they fuck up or fuck around, then I'm like, all right, well, where else can I get this? Not you guys. So.
Yeah. Well, it's like Nintendo even did that too with like digital games, which I think is kind of a weird concept to do. But I remember it was like when they did the Fire Emblem one and the NES version, when they're like, here's the brought to the US first time translated, you know, by Nintendo at least. One, you know, kind of, you know, updated Fire Emblem one, and it was, you know, it was only like $7 or something. It was actually quite cheap. I don't remember it being that expensive, but like, it was like, yeah, we're only going to sell it for 6 months and then it's gone. So of course it's gone by now, because this was about 2 years ago or whatever.
I remember the ad for that, and it made me just want to punch my phone that I was watching it on, just because the ad was so bad, because it's like back in 2001, is like some kids, poor voice acting kids, playing like Smash Brothers Melee. You're like, who's Marth? You don't know who Marth is? No, should I? Marth's the leader of this Fire Emblem. What? I don't know what you're talking about. If you say so. I want to strangle both these fucking children right here. These, like, it was just one of those, because I guess I was getting flashbacks of that kid, like, you don't know who Marth is? Yeah, well, I do. And and then there's the other kid who's just like, if you say so. Like, they're both the know-it-all kids somehow, even though one didn't know shit. They're so fucking such an irritating ad. Yeah.
Well, I will say, Nintendo has been, they must hire the same people that GameStop hires to do the fucking talking ads, because they'll get somewhere, it's just like, I just have to go, nope, mute, nope, I'll watch it, but I ain't fucking listen to this thing, you know what I mean? Like, new way, like, you know what I mean? Like, That really condescending voice, or it's like, it almost just feels like it's talking down to you, like you're retarded, you know?
Let's put on your helmet before you, I don't want you to hurt yourself while you're watching this.
Yeah, it's just like, no, it's just like, just say it. I didn't even say anything. Just play. It's a video game. It's a fucking video game from 1987 or whatever. Like, just be like, you know, just play your show. Be like, hey, coming to the U.S. for the first time ever, legally. Fire Emblem 1! I'm getting Mark. You're gonna come in there, you're gonna fuck some shit up, and you're gonna command him, because you're the commander of this army here, and you ain't gonna let anybody else live to see the day about it. But guess what? You only got 6 fucking months to buy the game, so get your credit card out, or beat somebody up on the street and take theirs, and make sure you get yourself a goddamn copy! Fire Emblem 1! Get on your Switch, bitch!
I'm waiting for that point to happen. Just like mass hysteria on the along the playground of kids beating each other up, saying they need it for Fire Emblem.
Exactly. No, one of those kids in school has a credit card. You know that little rich fucker does.
I'm just imagining, because you're talking about like how Nintendo is known for like the super condescending ads, and like they're like Nintendo Directs and all that. Like, we know our audiences, and just have like, for some reason, I got the image of like, careful not to like smack yourself in the face with the Wiimote, like that little like thing they have at the beginning of every Wii game, where it's like somebody just like backhanding their friend. Or, like,
yeah, you know, and I used to think that was stupid until I got smacked in the face by a Wiimote once, and then I was like, oh, there's a reason for that thing. Okay, and it doesn't feel good.
How real do you want it to feel?
Yeah, I don't know. I was like getting clubbed by plastic.
I guess you really were playing Punch Out, weren't you?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a weird thing that like they do that. I mean, I guess that's the same thing they did. They were doing it for a while there, because they all kind of came in waves. Because then there was also the Mario All-Stars 3D collection was also like, hey, you only got like 6 months to buy this, you know. I guess for Nintendo fans, it's kind of like, let's be honest, who doesn't buy it in the first month for the most part? I feel like with a lot of Nintendo stuff, they probably, you know, sells really hardcore for the first month or two. All the core audience gets it, and then it's like, okay, and then there's trickle sales from that point on.
wasn't the All-Stars Mario thing, wasn't that like a specialty thing? Like you had to have enough points to buy it in the first place or some bullshit like that?
Are you talking about the Wii one?
Yeah.
The Wii one, no, I think you had to pre-order that one. You couldn't go in the store and buy it. It had to be pre-ordered. That was the one. The one that had the specialty points, that was the Zelda 4-pack collection on GameCube, where you got all four of those. Which that one I remember because that was that one where it's like, that's the most mind-blowing thing. Nintendo gave that away for only registering three games on your like My Nintendo account or whatever they called it back then. Used to call it some Club Nintendo, I think is what it was then. Mm. But yeah, all you needed was three games. And, you know, that's still that time period where, like, you know, you just not like you can just go out and randomly buy three games. So I remember me and Sister, we went to Blockbuster with a notepad in hand, and we would open up the cases, and one of us would sort of watch while the other one would write down the codes out in the games.
Yeah, the Ocean's 11, like, bongo drums, like, is
your right? Yeah. So that's how we got the, you know, we probably had one or two games registered each, but we needed like an extra one or so. That's where we got them from.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they should be probably pretty soon. I imagine they'll be coming out with news about their, because I think their next, the quarter is almost up. So they're probably coming up with news for their next system soon, probably after Christmas, I'd assume.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. It's kind of a weird one because that Switch has been going on for a good while now. And it's at that point where, you know, I know I've said this before, but it's at that point where you really are playing a glorified Xbox 360 with the Switch. Like, that's how far back in time it really is, kind of hardware wise. You know,
the next one's probably going to be like a glory, like, not, I mean, probably not this, not obviously stronger, but probably like, if this right here, let's say if this Switch is an N64, the next one's probably a Dreamcast. So probably not like that kind of between stage, not a GameCube, but something that's roughly that between phase of like, you know, PS2, yeah. Nintendo 64, and then like GameCube, PS1, PS2. Yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, yeah, if I have a theory on it, I'm going to guess it's probably going to be a high-end PS4 is what it's going to be equivalent of, you know? Probably. So it's always that weird thing that, like, it's kind of a bummer that Nintendo doesn't just step it up and just make, like, it's weird because it's like, you know, for the longest time, you know, Nintendo, I mean, there's always a system that was always more high-end than Nintendo, but most of the time those systems, you know, it's like, you know, Neo Geo against Super Nintendo. Yeah, Neo Geo was more high-end, but it also came at a very high-end price, too, you know? But for the most part, you know, Super Nintendo was higher end than Sega Genesis, its main competitor, you know. The N64, disincluding the fact that it didn't have the extra disk space, you know, the 3D graphics parts of it were higher end than PlayStation and Sega Saturn, you know, beyond that. And then GameCube still, for the most part, matched PS2 and Xbox, disincluding, once again, the disk space. That's, like, its only issue. But the rest of it there was all, like, on par. And then it's, like, ever since then, it's been, like, one step behind. And the one thing I will say that this is the one thing that could catch Nintendo up real fast, real quick, is if they double down more on the streaming type stuff, because that streaming, it's almost there where you're, you know, you could just, that could be your only gaming, and you never ever actually install a game or play a game on hardware or anything like that. You just full on stream it. You know, Microsoft's got that really dialed in. You know, it's at the point where it's just like you boot up fucking Bill Gates' Xbox and, you know, it's ready to go and it's doing good. And, you know, the most part, it works really solid. PlayStation's is a little bit lagging behind, but I think it's getting closer still. But hopefully because of that new PlayStation handheld thing, they'll start getting their streaming thing actually really dialed in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you're right about what Nintendo's probably going to be. It's probably just going to be a booted up Switch, just a little, like you said, like just this, like PS4 site. Like, but the thing is, for a long time since the Wii, Nintendo's like, well, Wii was one thing. Wii was like, we just need to impress Nintendo fans and grandmas at retirement homes. That's all we got to impress. And like, you know, because that's what, because like, Wii, even though there's some fantastic games on it, there is like heaps, and I mean massive fucking heaping mountains of just like dog shit, like $20 mini game collections on there. So, but then like Wii U, which that's the only Nintendo system I never owned, was a Wii U. Mm-hmm. that one was like, I never really played it. It looked cool, but I'm guessing it didn't really have all that stuff. It just was just, I think people were confused by what it was exactly, and people backed away from it. And then, you know, we all know how what a runaway hit the Switch was. So,
yeah, and really the Wii, the Switch is really just a like, it's pretty much the same Wii U almost. In the end of the day, it's just a more like condensed version of the Wii U, because the Wii U is pretty much a glorified Xbox 360 with more features, ironically, than the Switch. But yeah, that's kind of the thing that like it's like they almost simplified it for like the Switch version to kind of make it be a more mass appeal of market or whatever, mass appeal for the market. But yeah, it's one of those weird ones though that they kind of add all that stuff up there and so on. I'm wrong, like the Switch, you know, awesome. I mean, for the early days of the Switch, I remember those ones for all the Wii U people. It's like, yeah, these games are cool, but they already came out for the Wii U. You know, I know other people are getting their minds blown by them, but like, well, played it 2.5 years ago. You know, like, where's the new stuff? You know, and then it kind of came out. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to whatever it is, because I'm at that point where I'm just, you know, getting, you know, excited about whatever it is, because we all know that the Switch is definitely at that. Unless it's a Switch-only game, I'll definitely probably buy the game for the most part on another system.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, we are at that point where, going off like, because, you know, you said, I already played these games on the Wii U, I know, that kind of thing. There's that point where, like, you would have huge system openers. Now we might have maybe the one system opener, but more often than not, at least for Nintendo, they'll often do the thing of like, okay, well, okay. This was technically going to be the last game for the previous system, but now it's the opener for the next system. You know, they've done that twice already. So I can only see them doing that with maybe, like, I'm guarantee you, like, Mario Wonder and whatever, like, you know, there's going to be a special edition or version of Mario Odyssey or Mario or Luigi's Mansion Collection or something like that right when the Switch comes, right whenever the next Switch comes out or something to that effect, I'm sure, you know?
Yeah, I almost think it's going to be a special edition version of Breath of the Wild, too.
That, too. Of Tears of the Kingdom. There's definitely going to be an updated version of Tears of the Kingdom or just a remaster. That's definitely going to happen. And then, it comes out when it comes out. I'm wondering how much reverse capability it will have, if any, but that's not a big deal because the Switch is luckily easy enough to kind of like small enough that it doesn't take up too much space, so.
Yeah, well, because it's weird because, the Switch has no backwards compatibility. So, and that's one of the first Nintendo systems in a while to not have that. But I almost kind of wonder, too, because it's one of those ones, like, I do think that Nintendo is going to be the only company that carries physical media. I almost personally don't think that PlayStation and Xbox, by the time their, you know, next systems come out, PS6 and Xbox 5, there's no way that they're probably going to have physical media. I feel like that's going to be such, it'll be surprising if they still have disc by that point.
I think time will tell, you know, I mean, I imagine they'll have like maybe the special edition or something like that, but you know, even then the special edition probably just comes with a download code and a statue of the character or whatever the fuck, you know?
Yeah. And the only reason I say it is because like Sony themselves said that only 75% of their sales are all digital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so it's like you add about 5 more years. I bet you that number is going to go up to like 80, like close to 90%.
I try to buy my Switch games physically, but at the exact same time, I sometimes just find myself like, I don't want to go all the way to the store today, you know? So more often than not, I'll try to buy them physically, but sometimes I just don't feel like leaving my house. I mean, I leave my house for other shit, but sometimes I just don't want to go all the way to the store just for this one thing, you know? So yeah, I do it every so often.
Different because Switch has cartridges and a lot of times the games are still actually on it. PlayStation and Xbox, they're just, you know, they're just licensing codes is about the only thing on there. There's no real game on the disc anymore or anything like that.
Yeah, that too.
So,
but you know, one of those things. We'll see. I'm sure they'll be there. I think they're tight-lipped until, you know, Christmas, because obviously they're going to say, I remember some people saying like, which for a minute I thought maybe, I'm like, no, they're not going to do that. Where they're like, there's no way they're going to announce like a new system right before Christmas. Like, but it's not coming out for Christmas. Like, well, I'm not buying none of this fucking games then. Like, oh, fuck.
Well, so, it's kind of weird. Like, Nintendo hasn't done one for Christmas in a long time. Like, all the systems have been coming out like in the springtime, like Switch and Wii. I guess the the Wii was still, because that was like late October.
It was Christmas. Oh, yeah, no, that was, you're right, that was October or whatever, so, yeah.
That's still the Christmas run, though, is like, you know, it gives you like 2 minutes or 2 months to go find one. But,
64, yeah, remember that was, yeah.
Yeah, well, everything else has pretty much been. Nintendo's the only one that's actually switched that up. It's like they switched it to like their handheld, because mostly a lot of the handhelds always would come out in springtime for some odd reason. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It's like a bizarre one. It's like maybe it's that one where it's like, okay, well, you know, let them wait a couple months and then maybe they'll build up some cash reserve past Christmas to come get a Game Boy Advance or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of like behind on a lot of shit. Like I'm planning to, when I have a minute, I'm planning to get some of the new games that came out, but I'm really behind on a lot. So when that happens, I'll be able to join the conversation again about what's going on in video games. Like, I know that like my office here is covered in video game shit, but I'm just like, video games, what are those again? How does this work? You know, I know it's bad when I go back and play a game. It's a game I usually know by heart, but I'm just immediately kind of like an old man, like, which one turns to goddamn camera? How am I aiming? Oh, shit. You know, I feel like I have that every so often, especially if it's a game that's like requires you to be really fast, think on your feet and move around a lot. And then it's been a long time since you play it. You come back, you're just shit kicked in royally, you know, like going back, yeah. I never finished it because the DLC sucked, but I was trying to, you know, that happened to me a little bit with like the Sonic Frontiers DLC, even though that wasn't that long ago. And then but then you're especially depowered with all the new characters. Like, you can't do basic shit. So I'm like, why am I losing? Oh, I got to unlock Punch? Well, that's fucking stupid, you know? So there you go.
Yeah, you get that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's interesting because this year has actually been one of those ones where there actually hasn't been a crap ton of games at the end of the year like there normally is. Because most of the time, there's always like an overwhelming feeling of like, okay, here's a bunch of games to kind of catch up on and so on like that. And this year it's like, no, that's it. And like, it's like, it's pretty much done already. It's like, yep, we're done. That's it. Wait till January, you know, like nothing new to get.
I'm really behind on games, but I feel like for a minute, I'm not going to lie, I was really overwhelmed with, cause like not overwhelmed, but like I was thinking about, cause we always do a movie list in the beginning of the new year. Mm-hmm. And, I was like, I don't know if I see enough movies, but over back in my visit in America and on the way back on the plane, that's where I took an opportunity. I was like, when I was in America, there's a lot of stuff on streaming there that's not on streaming here that I was able to catch up mm-hmm. on. And then on the plane ride over too, I was just like, okay, I want to knock these things out. And now I'm like, okay, I got enough things to put on my list now. So I'm actually at that point where I'm having to pick and choose, like, you know, am I gonna have this movie on there, am I gonna have that movie on there? There's like only like two or three movies I still need to see, but my list mm-hmm. is pretty much there.
Yeah, that's kind of how mine is too. There's maybe just like a handful of other movies I'd like to see and like a couple more that come out this year, and then that's about it for that one too.
And Dune doesn't come out this holiday season, does it?
I don't think so. I don't think that comes out till next summer or something like that. Like, okay. That was one of those movies where they had the trailer and then it just like I kind of forgot about it for a while. It's like, oh yeah. Like, one of those ones, like, oh, yeah, we had a trailer, and then we'll come back to you on that, you know? So.
I still need to see Killers of the Flower Moon. I just got to take half the day out of, I just got to take half my day out to put it aside to see it.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those ones where it's like, it takes its sweet time. Another one you should go out of your way to go see is that John Woo movie, Silent Night. That thing was super good.
That's a John Woo movie?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a John Woo movie. I just thought that was okay, well, now I definitely want to see it. I didn't know it was John Woo. I mean, it looks just kind of like, I mean, revenge is always like a popular thing in action movies, but there is this new, like, since John Wick, it's kind of like the bring him back the revenge film, but in a different way. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I feel like, is it more kind of like John Wick than anything else? Or is it more like classic style 90s revenge movies?
It's like a mixed match of John Wick and kind of Punisher for sure. But what I kind of liked about it is the two things. One, the movie's a silent movie. I mean, the title tells you that, but you don't really think that's actually what it is. But the dude gets shot in the throat in like the very beginning of the movie, and then he can't speak. And then I guess everybody else around is like, well, we don't want to be rude, so let's not talk either. And so the whole movie's done like a silent picture. And it's about a dude who kind of goes back to like, he like starts just training himself to do the revenge thing. But what I kind of like about it is like the guy, though he does a lot, he puts a lot of practice in and gets really good. Like when the shit starts to get real, like he's in for a surprise every single time, and things definitely do not always go his way. But that's what makes it kind of interesting.
Oh, no, I definitely got to see that. Yeah, now that's another thing coming back. Like, let's try to artify this shit. Because there's another movie I saw, and I talked about it briefly. Like, Nobody Will Save You. Like, that's technically a silent movie, and you don't realize it till, because, you know, you might hear, like, singing on the radio, and the girl kind of singing to herself, but no actual sentences said. Or, like, she'll pass somebody, and there'll be, like, light murmuring or, like a passing conversation, but nothing, but no, like, dialogue is happening. And then it's, like, 10 minutes into the movie, like, not a word's been said, and later she goes into town, and there's still no one, no moment of, like, anybody talking to each other. I'm like, but you can still totally tell what's going on. There's, like, one or two lines of dialogue at the very end, and that's like, oh, okay, all right, cool, cool. You know, I didn't know that was going to happen with this flick, and that's just always kind of one of those little, some people annoy them, but I thought that was kind of cool. You know, just one of those things you don't expect about it. You don't notice it till, like, 20 minutes in, like, it's one of them fancy artsy pictures taps, right? You know, but they got the aliens in there to kind of catch my attention, so it all works out, you know. And then, you know, Silent Night, I didn't know that was literally a silent picture. I just thought the guy couldn't talk. I think I heard something about that. Knowing that, now it's Christmas themed, right?
Yeah, well, like, it's like, that's like the shooting happens on Christmas or whatever, and then he pretty much prepares till next Christmas to get his revenge. So his training regime's like a year long, or maybe a little bit less than that, because he's in the hospital for a while. But
his kid dies like on Christmas Day or something.
Yeah, like one of those ones. And then so he's like, I'm gonna fuck their Christmas up, pretty much, you know. And he literally changed himself to become Punisher. That's like the best way it sort of feels, you know. And just learns all these skills in like a year. And what I like about it is the training kind of goes, it's not just like a montage where, like, here's this like 7 minute thing, and it's one of those ones where, like, he's kind of there. Like, they spend a long time on his training. And I thought that was actually kind of cool, too.
That is cool, because I feel like long times is just kind of like, all right, we're going to play, like, the badass rock song and just, like, push-ups and just, like, loading the gun quickly, putting it back, you know? Like, just kind of like a lot of desaturation, maybe lights shining through, like, the windows of an empty warehouse as he's just doing that, which is cool in itself. But, you know, I see it so much now, especially in, like, training montages. So now, knowing they actually go into detail of the training, that's actually pretty cool. So you have to check that one out. I still need to see, so I got to see that. I need to see The Boy and the Heron, and that's the Miyazaki picture. And then,
oh yeah, God, when I was in Los Angeles, I was really trying to see if I could see it down there, because of course it's not playing anywhere up north for some reason.
It's surprisingly playing here with English subtitles, which caught me off guard, which makes me think maybe Godzilla would have been playing here with English subtitles too, if this is playing here with English subtitles. And then,
I definitely want to go see. Like, I literally was like, once I was like, there's 11 o'clock showing. It's some random town here on, like, LA County. Let's go visit this theater.
Yeah. And then, trying to think what else. There's like also, there's those ones, and then I still think I need to see, there's another one, Saltburn. I heard Saltburn is pretty good. I've heard people make comparisons, like, it's not this, but it's kind of like a Martin McDonagh movie, where it's, like, kind of artsy and kind of very, like, dark, but funny in, like, a dark, tragic kind of way. So I'm like, okay, I'm curious. Apparently it's about really debauchery among really poshy people in a certain part of, I guess, Saltburn, which is a place somewhere in England. So, yeah.
Interesting. I heard of that one, but I couldn't say anything more beyond that. I don't think it played in theaters or anything.
It's playing in theaters. I think it was actually playing, or at least I saw it on a coming soon poster when I was over visiting.
Oh, okay. Well, they did do that thing where they dropped, like, six movies in, like, one day, like, all of a sudden. Like, oh, by the way, you thought you had nothing to do this winter. Here's a bunch of movies. Go fucking to the theater. You know, there's that. There's also another movie I kind of want to watch. It pops up. It's Tom DeLonge, the dude of Blink-182, has, like, some kind of alien movie. And since I know that dude's, like, so into aliens, like, to the way extreme, I almost want to see what he makes in a movie. I'm not too sure how it will be, but I'm interested. It's just one of those ones.
So I think that's kind of funny, because I remember, you know, back when I listened to Joe Rogan, I remember he was on Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan, who and
I that said, was one of the best episodes, because, like, he was so in, like, dude, the government tells me things, like, I know things, you know, they send stuff to me because you're the guy of Liquid A2. Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, because, like, Joe Rogan is somebody who will, like, with no, like, fucking real evidence or any backup or any research, someone will say some crazy shit, like, whoa, man, that's crazy. Whoa, really? You know? And then this dude comes on. He's just like, the aliens. And that's the whole thing. Joe is like, yeah, okay. Yeah. And he was even kind of like joking around with them a little bit, like, really? All right. You're bringing this up. He was actually giving him, like, he wasn't even giving him pushback, really. He was like, if you say so. Okay. All right. You know, like he was just trying not to laugh the whole time. And his whole thing is, he says, I'm making a company. Basically, I'm working with the government. And it's a way to ease people into the truth about aliens. And like, basically he had this thing where he said, I remember in that interview, because I remember it was just such a batshit fucking interview, where he was saying something like to the effect of like, there is like a book about Roswell. No. He did a lot of like investigation himself into the Roswell thing. Right? And then from there, he like put out a book and filled in some gaps where he thought gaps were at. And then he was approached by the government and told to like, this isn't exactly it, but it's kind of close. How do you know this? Like, I just couldn't figure it out, man. You know, I'm part of Blink 182. You know, like, oh, that makes sense. Okay. Well, okay, we're going to work with you, but there's certain things you can't say. There's certain things we're going to give you the okay on, which I think would be so funny if it was like somebody just like, dude, give me that like toy badge from Jingle All the Way, knock on the door. Like, We're the government. Alien division, like, oh fuck, yeah. I knew this day was coming.
It literally has like that thing of like, it sounds like a movie concept. They're like, okay, we need to make a secret agent, but we need him to be able to like travel around the world and get into certain places. But what would be perfect? A world famous rock band. like that. It has like that whole concept to it, like one of those things. But that's the thing, is I'm almost like one of those ones, I just want to see what that movie's about. And I'm like maybe it'll be one of those ones will be like, oh, here's some real interesting weird shit that like he put together in it. It might not be anything at the same time too, but it's one of those ones I kind of want to see it still.
I haven't even seen a trailer for it. I just assume, because he said like, yeah, man, it's this company I'm coming out with where it's like all science fiction themed, and it's kind of like helped to ease people into the truth about aliens, and so people aren't freaked out when it happens. I'm like, then after we read the Men in Black comic, I'm like, that's where this motherfucker got the idea. Because the Men in Black comic, they're just like, okay, because like comic books, video games, all this stuff, it's all propaganda from the government. So people are aware and know how to approach these situations when the truth finally gets out there. So, which is clever, you know? And then, this dude
it's
comes
clever in the Men in Black one.
In the Men in Black way. And this dude just like, that works, you know? So yeah. I honestly, you know, I'll look it up. I mean, I'll listen to Blink-182 and every once in a while. So I'll check out like a streaming sci-fi movie he puts out or whatever. Sure.
Yeah. As I said, yeah, it's one of those ones. Like, yeah, I think it's, yeah, definitely, you know, small production, but I don't know. It had like on Amazon, it had like high star rating. I mean, that probably Blink-182 fans just like, we're going to rate it up higher, but you never know.
Yeah, well, I can't even trust a lot of Amazon reviews. Like, if something on Amazon legitimately has a bad score, then whoa. But every so often, because everything has its fan basis, so everything, like, movies you know are hated will have, like, a high score. What was, do you know those movies called, by chance?
Not off the top of my head. I saved it on my Prime list, but, if I wasn't on my phone, I would look it up, but it's too dangerous to try to... Yeah. Switch pages. No,
I get you. It's an alien movie, right?
Yeah. So, you know.
Monsters of California?
I think that's it. That sounds about right.
Monsters of California. Let me get a picture here. Monsters of California.
But that's like one of the ones. That's like one of the ones I would like to check out. But other than that, though, there's just, yeah, as I said, there's about a handful. There's probably about maybe give or take five more movies that I'd like to see. I'll try to do one of those deep dives. Every once in a while, I'll pull up like that full list of 2023 and go, okay, where's something here? Or let's see if there's any hidden kung fu movies that like kind of went under the radar or something like that. But
yeah, I don't think my list is as versatile as it has been other years, but it is what it is. You know, you see what you see.
My movie list has a lot of like action revenge flicks on it. I noticed that was like the big thing of the year. It's like, oh, that was really what most movies kind of ended up being this year. Oh, well, that's okay, though. I mean, I'm not going to complain about that.
since John Wick, there's been at least one or two big action revenge movies each year, and one of them is usually at least pretty good. I mean, nobody made both our lists last year, so.
Yep. Well, that's, I mean, like, it's one of those ones that, like, that's the thing about a revenge movie. It's even like the Silent Night one. Like, it uses kind of a very, like, the core story of it is about as generic as you could probably get, but it's the other ways it goes about it is what makes it awesome. And I think that's the thing about a revenge, like, is they don't really need to be, like, groundbreaking story-wise. It's you, how do you serve up your action? How do you serve up your coolness? Like, there's so much of that stuff. It's like kung fu movies. It's like, you think about it, like, if someone's not really into kung fu movies, and they probably, like, sit there and, like, if they watched it kind of, like, over your shoulder, like, you know, like, 30 kung fu movies in a row, they'd be like, it's just a bunch of people throwing punches and kicks at each other, like, over and over and over and over and over again. It's like, yeah, but that's not the whole thing. It's like, it's the small stuff in it. It's all the little, like, different ways it goes about it, how each one's kind of individually different. Or that kind of thing that, like, it doesn't matter how many times a gun's fired on screen, like, it's always kind of cool. It's like, firing guns, there we go, I'm sold. It doesn't take much to please me.
Someone got shot in the head, awesome. 5 stars.
Oh, no. Cool. There's some explosions in the background. Yeah, there we go, that's all I needed.
With a tagline or like a one-liner, you know, like,
yeah,
sorry to blow your mind, boom, blows his brains out. Yeah, no, well, no, they're like, well, even coming off the revenge thing, well, even John Wick, because when you just say John Wick, like, his dog is killed and his car is stolen, like, well, that's different than the wife or the girlfriend or the kid. So that's one thing right there. But then, because that's what they advertise the movie, and then you watch the movie, because I don't, at least in the trailer, I don't remember all the stuff about a secret society of assassins. Like, that gets dropped on you. Like, the secret society that uses their own currency and services strictly in this old fashioned kind of like code of honor and all that kind of stuff. I was like, oh, I didn't know that was happening in this movie. That adds a whole other layer. And then how you're like, you could be friends with assassins, but then, you know, they might be assigned to kill you, but hey, nothing personal, which then itself is like a code, which is a cliche, but at the same time, the level of like casualness they have with it and how, oh, these are kind of like holy grounds or to assassins, we can't fight here. You know, just some of the details like that, that kind of build up. And plus it did some like kind of nuanced storytelling without trying to force feed you a bunch of exposition, I thought, with through just little things about his wife and other aspects. So, and I think a lot of revenge movies have been taking cues from that and doing that whole, like, I say, like, heightened fantasy, like heightened action, not to the point of it being a full-on fantasy or science fiction film, but to that point of like being that, I guess, that Kill Bill kind of over-the-topness, you know, something to that effect.
Yeah, well, it's like, I think the thing that also made John Wick work so well is that it's made like it's a video game. It just happens to be a movie. I think that's the thing. It's like, it's 100% written like that was supposed to be like a straight up video game. And then they just kind of instead turn into a movie. And I think that's what really adds like great layers to it and so on like that. Like, there's just so much. Because I remember when the trailer came out, and I don't think I even saw John Wick 1 in theaters. Because I was just like, oh, okay, that looks kind of cool. I'll get around to it. And then, I don't know, just didn't. And then I saw it like later on, rented it or something like that. And I was like, oh, wow, this actually has a lot of things going for it. Like, I almost kind of wished it showed more of that in the trailer, just like they kind of get you going there, you know?
I kind of had the same thing, yeah. So I didn't see that. I waited till that thing was on Netflix. I'm like, oh, I should have saw this in theaters. This is pretty good. Either I still have not seen any of the other ones in theaters, though, as it turns out.
I saw 2, 3, and 4. After that point, I was like, okay, I'm there, and they're all solid. Well, 4, if you haven't seen 4 this year, you might as well just go watch them all if you've been missing out on them.
I've seen 1 and 2, and I really like 1 and 2, and I've heard mixed things about 3, but 4 I hear is pretty good, just longer than needs to be, but still like better than 3. That's what I hear. Yeah.
Well, yeah, 3 was still good. It's like many of them, it's like, yeah, it's kind of like, they are kind of the same movies over and over again. Like, I think the second one was definitely the best one, but...
Yeah, second one's really good, yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I feel like. I feel this year's definitely going to be, like, that seems to be the takeaway movies for the most part, you know. But, we'll kind of get those all wrapped up, and it's coming up sooner than you'd think. But, catching up on all the rest of those, catching up on the rest of the games. Not that there's a whole lot left, but there's a few there, and yeah, getting closer there. And then we'll see. It makes you wonder if this year was weak for movies. Like, I'm afraid of like how weak 2024 might be with like even more movies getting pushed back. So we'll see how that all goes.
I don't feel like this year's too weak for me, because I'm at the point where I'm having to pick and choose like what's what's making the list, what's not, which I thought I was at that point earlier, but like I stacked up enough. It's like, okay, I'm having to make some calls here. So before I'm like, well, I guess this is on the list because it's all I saw, you know? So.
Well, that's what I mean. Is I don't say week like the movies are bad. It's just there's not a ton of movies this year. Like that's the thing. It's like the list is not that dense like it has been in multiple other years. You know, it's a pretty it's one of those ones. I mean, you know, yeah, there's still stuff to see, but you know, yeah, there's definitely not as many movies out. But
it's a year we did a top 15, and like the episode was like 3 hours long. It's like, oh man,
yeah, because there's so many movies that year. It's like, oh god, like this is one of those ones where it's like, yeah, it's like. I definitely feel there is still some like just slots that will just get filled. It's not that they're bad movies, but they're like if it was any other year, they would definitely not be in the top 10 section. But but yeah, as I said, a couple more to catch up on, and then we'll get there and so on. But yeah, good stuff to look forward to. We'll see what happens. A couple more movies coming out in cinemas still towards the end. But beyond all that good stuff, go to oldmanorange.com for more podcasts, comic books like Pizza Boys, animations, and all that other fun stuff that we got. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes.
And I'm Ryan Dunnigan.
And we'll see you some other time.
Later, folks.